I would like to thank the organisers of this conference for inviting me. Secondly, I would like to start off by introducing the project that I work for, which, as you've heard, is an organisation called Hope Not Hate, which is this year having its 10th birthday. Hope Not Hate is an organisation established actively to oppose fascism, racism, anti-Semitism, homophobia and other hate prejudices. It's just as well we also oppose ageism, otherwise I might not be on the platform. We do actively combat these phenomena, which we regard as being intensely socially divisive, which undermine social cohesion. Everybody in our project is a socialist. We all, in a broader sense, would like to see the establishment of socialism, but we all know that this is not a practical possibility in the circumstances in which most of the world, never mind Western Europe, finds itself. So what it means is that the ideology to which most of us adhere actually drives our activity forward. And we have the simple recognition that although we are not going to be able to make the world a tremendously better place in the future, we can work very hard and determinedly to ensure that it doesn't become a worse place. And that, I think, is the kind of leitmotif of our campaigning work. That work goes forward primarily on a mass basis. We don't believe in working in small groups with small circles of people who are only talking to and communicating with people who say the same things as themselves. This will take us nowhere. We engage in mass work. And working in that way, we've effectively, for the moment, because we do know it will be back, we've smashed the main British fascist organisation, the British National Party, an organisation which before our campaign really gathered momentum, had managed to secure the election of two members of the European Parliament and also to have 51 representatives sitting on local councils in Britain. Now they have one there who is not even elected. The other 50 have been disappeared because we campaigned very hard in the areas where these people did sit on councils to really dig a big hole under the British National Party, and we've succeeded. And what we're seeing now is a really big fragmentation of the militant far right in Britain, a breakdown into smaller organisations, most of which think that the best idea is to go back to what the BNP, the British National Party, was best at, and that is violence. They haven't shown much signs of success. Now you might wonder how we did it, and I mentioned mass work. We produced large amounts of material that is for the purpose of going into communities and not running a campaign from the outside, but approaching communities where fascists are active and finding people within those communities who are prepared to take a stand and prepared to organise their friends, their neighbours, their colleagues at work, and to campaign within that community. And we do this in a number of ways. One way in which we do this is through the production of tabloid newspapers. During the 2010 general election in a suburb of borough of London, or a suburb of London called Barking and Dagenham, we distributed 92,000 of these. Altogether, in the election, we produced nearly 5 million copies of localised editions of tabloid newspapers, really tackling the British National Party head on. The headline here says, "New BNP, same old thugs." In other words, the same old hooligans, yeah? We also produced material that was tailored to different sections of communities. So, for example, we produced leaflets specially aimed where you had a Jewish population, aimed at the local Jewish community, and secured the support of rabbis for our activities. With the Muslim community, we produced leaflets that were specifically aimed at Muslims. And again, we worked very hard to secure the support of the leaders of faith group, different Muslim faith groups, because, you know, the Muslim community is very variegated. We produced material aimed at women. Now, this here is a small 12-page pamphlet which was produced for distribution specifically to women. In fact, this is a very valuable object I've got in my hands because it's one of the very few that we have left. As I said, we produced 800,000 and we distributed 800,000. There's hardly any left. We also aim to intervene inside the trade unions, sometimes by making agreements with the leaderships of trade unions, so the process is top down, sometimes by working with groups in specific workplaces and their workplace representatives, which in Britain are called shop stewards, and working with them so that that process tends to be from the bottom upwards. Critically, we are working a lot now with what was once the most powerful section of the British working class, namely the coal miners. The same coal miners who 25 years ago were on strike for an entire year to stop the closure of their collieries by the government of Margaret Thatcher. And the situation inside the former coal fields is really very bad. There is massive impoverishment, massive unemployment, massive social deprivation, and these are areas where, you know, 25 years on from a strike that had enormous amount of solidarity, it embodied the word solidarity, in fact. Now you're on the third generation on, and you have fascists trying to penetrate there. But they're meeting opposition and they're meeting resistance, and one of the areas of the former National Union of Mine Workers we particularly work in is County Durham in northeast England. And this is a brochure we produced for the Durham Miners Gala, which is now, it's the biggest annual working class demonstration in Britain, attended by around 100,000 people every year. And it's a festival, a celebration of the spirit of the mining communities, which continues even though there's no longer a coal industry. We also have some kind, I would say, of international outreach. And we were very proud that 2 years ago, when the coal miners in Spain went on strike, We were able to react immediately and with the National Union of Mine Workers in Britain to begin a campaign for material solidarity for the Spanish miners. Now, you might say, well, what the hell's that got to do with Hope Not Hate? What's it got to do with it? Well, it's to do with another aspect of our work, which is the rekindling and preservation of memory, of our own struggles, of how our own class, our own people have fought against fascism. And there was no section of workers ever that has the record, can even begin to match the record of anti-fascism of the Spanish miners in Asturias and León. And as soon as we received news of that strike, we organised collections. In the space of 5 weeks, we collected 35,000 euro, which was taken over to Spain. I had the privilege of being invited to sit in at meetings of the strike committee, and we were able to create links between anti-fascists in Britain, at least the anti-fascists who work in and with Hope Not Hate, with the Spanish miners and with their British counterparts. That for us was very important, because at any meeting where we stood up and appealed for money, people obviously wanted to know and raised the question, well, what's that got to, why is Hope Not Hate collecting money for striking miners in Spain? And we were able to explain about the role of those workers in fighting against Franco fascism. We were able to explain how 4,000 of them were murdered by the forces of General Franco. We're able to explain how even after Franco got power, they conducted guerrilla warfare against the fascist regime in Madrid. So it was really important. And we tried to do that as well in a whole lot of other respects. For us, the Spanish Civil War is something we honour. We honour the people who went to fight in Spain. And the same as momentous events like the Battle of Stalingrad. These are important, and they're very important in reaching out to the youth, because there's no point in going to young people with moralistic, oh, well, we're opposed to fascism, we're opposed a bit to racism, you know, and being vague and sort of floppy and sloppy. We don't do that. We approach the youth with a resolute attitude that if they're with us, they're going to become fighters against fascism. And that doesn't mean going out on the street and having a punch-up. You know, the days of that, which I used to do quite a lot, they're gone. You can't do it anymore, you know, unless you want to spend a lot of time in one of Her Majesty's holiday camps. So, you know, we have to try to create a kind of elan, a spirit, a positive attitude, so that, you know, we can fight the pessimism of deprived communities. And the pessimism is understandable. You know, when you've got no job, when you've got a conservative government constantly attacking your welfare rights. And that situation is happening because the previous Labour government did nothing to defend people's welfare rights. We also, you know, fight constantly against the anti-immigrant propaganda that is, you know, it's rife in Britain. There was a period during last summer in the run-up to the European elections when you couldn't switch on the radio or the television without hearing something about immigrants, you know, and they were trying to create and engender the feeling that immigrants were responsible for everything, you know. You know, you break a plate in the kitchen. It wasn't you, was it? Bloody immigrants. You know, they were trying to engender that sort of hatred and dislike. Now, at the moment, to a lesser extent, some of the mass media's propaganda effort has been turned to people who are coming from the accession states, in the European Union, in particular the Baltic states, Poland, Romania and Bulgaria. And of course, the mass of the population in Britain is easily led into a confused view that people from Romania are all Roma, or as they call them, gypsies, yeah? Which, as we know, is nonsense. But if it wasn't nonsense, that shouldn't make any difference anyway, because people are entitled to some, you know, to human rights. So what we faced now, we've got, I think for the moment, we've defeated the far right. We have an emerging sort of right populist movement called the United Kingdom Independence Party, which has emerged, and that is that's hoovering up large numbers of votes from all the main political mainstream parties, because basically they can offer every policy to everybody. Totally demagogic and totally without principle. We've got that problem to contend with, and what they are inciting is not racism, it's xenophobia. You know, their racism, their xenophobia, their their promotion of prejudice, it's not based on ethnicity, it's based on nationality. And none of the, as far as I know, large number of Poles who come to the country are black. Well, they weren't last time I looked. None of the Romanians are black. These are ordinary white people. And the media and certain politicians are whipping up the kind of sentiment that really there's not a lot of place for them. We've got too many coming. They're always objectified as them. We've got too many of them coming, and they are using up all our resources. We don't have enough schools, we don't have enough hospitals. That hasn't stopped the government closing hospitals down, mind you. But why let a contradiction get in the way of a good piece of toxic propaganda? We've got that situation, and this is, I think, going to be our next big struggle. And we're going to have to devise, I don't like to use the word propaganda, but I think it is appropriate. We're going to have to devise the necessary propaganda and sort of methods of activity to oppose that. And it's not going to be easy. It's also not helped as well, by the way, that in the Polish community, to take an example, you've got fascists running around there who are encouraging racism themselves. That's another challenge. We have to expose them. And a final thing now that we, you know, that has been forced upon us is to intensify our own work within the Muslim community, because large numbers of Muslim youth are beginning to be enticed by the ideas of jihad. And it's been estimated that there may be anything between 500 and 1,000 young Muslim men and women, because not just men and women who have gone to Syria to get involved with the murderous terrorists of ISIS. We're working very closely with people in the Muslim community to try to get some sort of handle on that, to assist them, provide them with the kind of assistance to enable them to challenge this really poisonous development within their own communities. And one other thing that we are very proud of doing, and I think this is extremely positive, is that together with the Community Security Trust, the CST, which is the security organisation of the Jewish community, we have brought them together with members of the Muslim community for the Jewish community security organization to train people from the Muslim community on security matters and on how to guard Muslim property, mosques and so on. You won't read about that in the papers, but I can tell you that is a fact. That is something we have done. Nobody's been able to do that. Nobody's been able to do that because the general assumption is that you have two communities here which hate each other. And that's not the case. Is it time up now? Right, I'm going to leave it there because I don't want to steal anybody else's time.